ParentQ Live is a monthly podcast designed to help parents do family better. Hey, my name is Reggie Joyner, and I'm so glad to be here with you today for the ParentQ Live podcast. ParentQ Live is a monthly podcast designed to help parents do family better, and I just happen to have a friend of mine here today that I'm excited about, who's going to talk with us a little bit about an issue related to kids and teenagers and how we should fight for their heart. Kara Powell is the executive director of the Fuller Youth Institute and a faculty member there. And she's also recently, which we're really excited about, on our staff to help with our team a little bit as an Orange Youth and Family Strategist. And you've recently written a book. I love this book. She's the author of this Sticky Faith Guide for Your Family. And we think it's a book that's going to change the way families around the world see faith and see family. So, Kara, welcome, and thanks so much for being here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Reggie. Thanks.
And today, I thought it'd be fun to just pick your brain a little bit as it relates to sticky faith and as it relates to the idea of fighting for the heart of your kids. And if you're listening to this and you're a parent of a preschooler or a child, we're going to focus today on teenagers. But take good notes, because one day your child is going to be a teenager, and some of what we talk about here for just a few minutes could help you in the way you talk with your kids and hopefully build a bridge to their life and to their heart. Kara, I know that when we talk about fighting for the heart, one of the things that you suggested is that we zero in on this idea of conversations.
Yeah.
And how conversations affect kids. So based on that, I'm just going to jump right in here. Why do you think conversations are so important?
Well, Reggie, you're a parent of four kids, and I'm a parent of three kids. And we know how busy families are, how hectic it can be. And I think conversations, more than anything else, are the glue that can help families stay together. Because conversations can happen at any time, any place.
That's good. That's good. And along the way, as parents, we have to redefine how we converse with our kids as they go from phase to phase or stage to stage.
Yeah, and let me just say, when I'm talking about conversations, I don't mean so much what we say. That's very important.
Good.
But it's not just the content. It's the overall vibe, the feeling, the ethos that happens around our conversation. So let me give you an example. Saturday night, I was in our bedroom and had the fire going, and I was on my laptop. Mm-hmm. A real romantic Saturday night for me. And Dave had tucked in our other two girls, and Nathan, our 14-year-old, walks in the room, and clearly he wants to talk.
Wow.
He wants to talk. And so I say, hey, have a seat on the bed. So he sits on the bed. And as a 14-year-old boy might be focused on, we spent 10 minutes talking about sports.
That's good.
That is what he wanted to talk about. He had a volleyball tournament that day. He wanted to debrief it with me. And you know what? The words that we said were important, but equally important, maybe even more important, was just me making the time and welcoming him into my space.
Well, and as a 14-year-old, you know that the window is closing on the opportunities you're going to have just a warm moment with him to connect. And I think when we move into the teenage years, conversations become a little more difficult.
Yeah.
So what is it that makes conversations hard at this stage?
Well, I think there's a handful of things. One is, you know, when our kids are younger, our connections with them can happen on our terms. You know, I remember when my kids were little and I wanted to connect with them, we would all tie blankets around our necks and pretend to be Superman and run through the house. And I could walk in the house at any time and play Superman, and it was a connection with my kid.
I actually jumped off our roof one time with the Superman cape. It didn't turn out so well.
Yeah. But how was that doctor's bill?
Yeah, it was not that great. So brought back memories.
Yeah, and you know, after running around playing Superman, we'd sit down and have apple juice and talk a little bit. Well, as our kids get older, it's not so much about when we want to connect with them on our terms or timing. It has to be on their terms and timing. So, you know, when my son's coming in, he's standing at the foot of my bed.
That's good.
I had stuff I was trying to do on my laptop.
You're right, because when you shift from the children's world to the teenage world, it really does change when the conversations happen and who drives the conversations.
Yeah, it's them. It's their openness,
absolutely,
their schedule, their pain.
Mm-hmm.
We see that with the teenagers and families that we study, and I see it with my own kids. When they've had a hard day at school, when they're feeling rejected, lonely, not sure who to ask to the dance, not being asked to the dance, you know, or banquet for some of your listeners, you know, whatever it might be. That's often one of those windows when they want to talk.
One of the things I love too about you, Kara, is that you do a lot of research to talk about what families have in common. And some of this comes from that. But one of the things that kind of concerns me today is how technology is affecting our communication.
For sure.
And what that looks like in the family.
Yeah. If you're a parent of a teenager, listen to this. You know that technology can consume your family and can sabotage your family's communication. Now, let me first off say that I think technology can actually really build our communication with our kids. I see with my kids, and I hear this from a lot of families, that often texts, not only can you let them know you're thinking about them at any time, but I see with my kids that, especially one of my kids, they share things with me by text.
I agree.
That they wouldn't share with me by in person.
I think actually texts allow us to have non-threatening opportunities so that kids will open up and almost stir up an issue so that we can talk about it later in a way that's healthy.
Yeah, whether it's a struggle like you're talking about or just an affirmation. You know, I've got to be honest, one of my kids is far more affirming of me by text than they are in person.
You know, I haven't even thought about that, but now that you mention it, I can think of moments in the last 2 or 3 years when I just got these surprising texts from my kids that were very encouraging and affirming that kind of surprised me. And I don't think they would have ever looked me in the eye and said,
yeah,
I want to tell you this.
Right. Or I appreciate you, Dad.
Right.
So before we get into the kind of limits we need to place on technology, let's acknowledge that technology can...
Absolutely.
As we fight for the heart, technology is a great tool for communication.
It's good.
Now let's talk about some of the challenges. So in one of our recent research projects, we studied over 50 families that were especially great at building relationships with each other and building sticky faith. And one of the dominant themes is these families' limited technology.
Wow.
They realized that if all family members, it's not just the kids, but it's we as parents too, if we're always on our devices, if phones intrude on every car ride, every mealtime, every outing to the movies, then it's going to be so much harder to connect. So wise families are setting limits on their family's use of technology.
That's good. I love to hear John Acuff talk about this because he talks about going ahead in the context of your week and planning out the moments that you'll go dark.
Wonderful.
With your technology. That's good.
For us, that's meal times. Both breakfast when we eat together, often very quickly before school as a family, and dinner. Our kids know none of us are on our phones. That's a prime time for us as a family.
And I think one of the things I like about you too, Kara, is the fact that you're a researchist, you're a pastor in many ways, and you're also a parent. So we blend all three of those things together. And there's a real practical side to this that I really love. So I'm going to push at that for just a second.
Please do.
I know that families are busy. And in your book, you talk about phrases and ways we can communicate. And in the middle of the busyness, how do we get practical in that scenario?
One of the phrases that I recommend to parents who are struggling with busyness and struggling to connect with their kids is this. Three words. I like you. I like you. You know, we as parents, we're better at saying I love you to kids. And I think often we say it so much that our kids, it kind of bounces off them.
Right.
But when you look your kid in the eye and say, I like you. I like who you are. I like being with you.
That's good.
That can go miles. So for busy parents in the midst of carpooling, in the midst of chemistry homework, in the midst of trying to spend a few moments with your kids, how can you tangibly let them know by your words that you like them?
I think that's so important because in many scenarios, I bet if you interviewed kids because of some of the conflict that exists in the home, a lot of kids would say, well, I'm not sure my parents like me.
Yeah. Or they'll like me if. They'll like me if I get the grades, if I get into the college, if I do well in soccer or hockey or whatever it might be. So
there's a condition attached to whether I love you because I've got to love you unconditionally because I'm your dad.
Right.
But that doesn't really communicate the same kind of worth and value that like does, as weird as that sounds.
Absolutely. And we're modeling God's affection for us.
That's good.
One of the quotes that has really impacted me in the last number of years is that God is especially fond of me.
That's good.
God's especially fond of me. And I want to pass that same message on to my kids, that I think they're some of the most amazing people on the planet.
That's great. And talking about conflict for just a second.
Yeah.
Give us some advice on how we navigate in our conversations through the conflict moments.
Well, much of my advice comes from my research. So I'll share a little bit more about what we learned when we studied 50 families, is that the parents who had quality relationships with their kids were very quick to say two other words, and that is, I'm sorry. Hmm. I'm sorry. Hmm. In fact, I remember one of the dads that I was interviewed, I called him and it was our designated interview time. And so he said, gosh, I don't even feel like I should have this phone call with you. I don't really feel like I'm doing a very good job at parenting. In fact, I've apologized to my teenage girls 3 times in the last week. Wow. And I stopped in and I said, okay, that's exactly why that's we want to talk to you. Yeah. There's something about in the midst of us in our conflict with our kids, there's always something we can apologize for.
And it's probably good for us to practice.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think it really is. I remember there were 2 guys who grew up in my student ministry, and they were just great guys. And one day we were riding down the road going on a trip together, and I said, what is one thing that your dad did really well? Mm. And they both immediately said, I mean, without even thinking, our dad was always quick to apologize.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about character. There's something about breaking down that wall of that can sometimes build up with our ego and our pride that I think apologizing and saying I'm sorry does.
Well, and just as we talked about when we say I like you, that expresses a huge part of the gospel and who God is. Apologizing does the same thing. I mean, you and I are on the same page about that Christianity basically boils down to grace.
Right.
And as we can extend Absolutely. Grace to each other in our family and model that with our kids, not only will they understand how to do that in relationships, but they'll understand more about God's grace for them.
So maybe I'm sorry, and just that simple phrase opens the door for us to express forgiveness. And that's kind of the basis. Because we all would say a great home is going to be characterized by forgiveness.
Yeah.
And kids are going to run to that kind of a home.
I am consistently surprised. I shouldn't be surprised anymore, but I'm consistently surprised with my own kids. When I apologize, like literally their facial expressions change. Mm-hmm. It's a game changer in conversation with kids when we as parents apologize.
Which I think that's exactly what we're talking about, because in that moment, you're fighting for the heart. Mm-hmm. You're not fighting to win the argument. You're fighting to win the heart.
Yeah.
And those are two entirely different things. And sometimes we can win the argument and lose the heart.
Yeah.
And I think that opens the door. And another thing I would love for you to speak into is just this idea of sticky faith and conversations related to my relationship with God. So when it comes to that, what are some tips you would give us on having those conversations?
Many of the parents we talk to, they are hesitant to bring up questions of faith or faith discussions for a handful of reasons, one of which is, and I've heard this from so many parents, I'm afraid my kid's going to ask me a question that I don't know how to answer. Mm-hmm. So if I ask them what they talked about at church or whatever it might be, they're going to somehow stump me, and then I'm going to look stupid, and they might believe in God less. It's like we have this understanding that doubt is somehow toxic to faith.
Right.
Here's been one of the greatest surprises out of our research. It's not doubt that is toxic to faith. It's unexpressed doubt that is toxic to faith. So more important than us as parents having the answer is us as parents creating a space in our homes and in our minivans and around our dining room tables where kids can express some of their toughest questions.
And I would even push it that even a little further and say, I think for parents who are looking for churches, who are looking to put their kids in an environment with small group leaders and in context of relationships, to look for a church that allows kids to wrestle and express their doubt.
For sure.
Because I think needing that safe place is a critical part of their chemistry, especially as they move to middle school and high school and things shift from concrete to abstract. This is a normal part of the process.
A really important part of the process, a part of a kid coming to own their faith. And, you know, one of the things about kids today is they're so surrounded by pain and struggle that they see around them or that they personally experience that it raises questions for them. In our family, this really came home to us about a year and a half ago when one of my closest friends, a wonderful mom of 4 kids, who my kids are close to, she passed away because of cancer, you know, in her mid-40s. And after she died, the day that we had to tell our kids about her passing, Krista, our 12-year-old, ran out of the living room where we were talking and ran into her bedroom. And she was stomping around in circles. And she said, I'm just so mad. I'm just so mad at God. Why would God allow Chrissy to die? Hmm. That was a question I don't have a good answer to.
Right.
I mean, here, I have a PhD in practical theology. I had no great answer to that question. But out of our research, there's another phrase that I've learned. And as I sat on Krista's bed and as she stomped around in circles in her room and then finally sat down next to me, I put my arm around her shoulder and I said this phrase. And I encourage parents to also make this part of your vocabulary. I don't know, but... Hmm. When our kids ask us tough questions as we're talking about faith and fighting for the heart, I don't know, but here's what I do know about God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but that's such a good question. Let's you and me continue to talk about this over coffee next week. I don't know, but let's invite another adult in our church or a close friend of our family who loves talking about these kind of questions to meet with us and help us figure it out. There's nothing wrong with saying, we don't know, but we're on a journey together and other people can help us with that journey.
I actually think, and let me see what you think about this, that when parents in that situation act like they know and they try to give them an answer, that sometimes that comes across as superficial and it does more damage than good.
Well, I think it communicates a small God that we can understand.
Right.
And if God is small or completely understandable, then God is not God.
They take the mystery away.
Yeah. God is big. God is complex. If we can fit God into a box and explain him always in 3 points, then that's not a very intriguing, complex God to follow.
And you know, one of the things that I heard you say a few years ago that I love related to this was how many kids have never heard their parents' story about faith?
Yeah, this was fascinating for us. Let me back up a little bit on the research. Let's say, Reggie, that you're my kid.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to do a little bit of age math to make that work.
I would like having you as a mom. That would be okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's nice, Reggie. So one of our PhD students at Fuller did this fascinating project in the midst of our sticky faith research where she looked just at parent-child faith conversations. And let's say, Reggie, that you're my kid. What our research shows is it is a good thing for me to ask you questions about your faith. How was church? How was youth group? What'd you talk about? And, you know, a lot of good Christian parents tend to do that. Well, depending on our relationship, your mood, your personality, I might get an answer or I might get kind of a leave me alone mom eye roll. But what our research suggests, it's a good thing to keep asking those questions. Now, here's the research twist, though. It's not just about me asking you questions about your faith. It's also about me sharing about my own faith.
It's good.
And that is what parents aren't doing. That's what I wasn't doing.
It makes them nervous, though.
It is a little vulnerable.
So how do they start with that?
Well, typically what they start with is they can use faith events like a church service to start the conversation. Hey, what'd you talk about? Regardless of how your kid answers you, oh, here's one thing that I love from the sermon that I heard today. Starting with that. Or as you were talking about, looking backwards and sharing how they've seen God work in their lives up till then. So one of the churches that is in our Sticky Faith cohort, they were very intrigued by this. And so the youth pastor asked 20 high school students, do you know how your parents became Christians? And to his dismay, zero of the 20 kids knew how their kids became Christians. And I share that story with roomfuls of pastors. And pastors come up to me afterwards and say, you know what? My kids don't know my faith story.
Interesting.
My kids don't know my journey. So one of the things I love saying to parents is our research isn't necessarily saying you need to, quote, be more spiritual. Our research is saying, share with your kids the spirituality you already have.
That's good.
So if you're praying about something, if God is teaching you something, if you heard a podcast, if you read something, if you can introduce that into conversation with your kids, not lecturing them, but just sharing organically about what you learn, that's all the better.
Okay, so we're talking about conversations and fighting for the heart. And I want to kind of wrap up with this one scenario because there may be a parent listening to this and they're going, you know what? My problem is my kids don't even want to talk to me.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, something happened in middle school.
Yeah.
You know, they became a different, you know, animal or something happened. And somewhere in the context of the early high school years, maybe something was broken in our relationship or I disciplined in a way I shouldn't have. But for whatever reason, I feel like there's a wall.
Yeah.
And they don't want to talk.
Yeah.
How do I tear that wall down?
My best way to answer that question is to tell a story about a mom who I met. And this was a mom of a teenage son who was going through just what you described. The son didn't want to talk to his mom, didn't even really want to spend time with her. So, you know, she would say, you want to go shopping? No, mom. Do you want to go out to eat? Pizza? Coffee? No, mom. No, mom. So this mom was a wise mom, and she decided to lean into what her son cared about. And her son loved movies. Loved, loved, loved movies. So this mom became a student of movies. She went online, she studied directors, actors, actresses, genres, etc. Because the only time that her son wanted to spend time with her was when she would say, do you want to go see a movie?
That's fine.
That's when he said yes. And the conversations on the way home, on the drive home, were by far the best conversations two of them had. And so this wise mom did a couple creative things. First off, she tried to find movies that had some sort of spiritual theme. I mean, it didn't have to be like Noah, not that blatant, but some sort of spiritual theme. And then this wise mom, she even picked movie theaters that were geographically further away than needed. So she had a longer drive back. But what I love about what this mom did, and I mean, all of us as parents, but especially when we're having a hard time connecting with our kids, leaning into our kids' interests. Our kids' sparks, our kids' passions, abilities, and skills. Let that be the springboard. And if it's gaming, then we learn a little bit about gaming and talk to them about gaming. Whatever it might be, we lean into their world.
And in some cases, it's back to the beginning. It's back to the idea of I like you.
Yeah.
It's back to this idea of just simply doing something with you that you like to do so that we can have fun together. Because there really is something about taking the agenda away and enjoying your son or daughter as a friend, even though you're still their parent, but working on that friendship that I think is huge.
You know, Reggie, you told me a story. I'm going to ask you a question now. You told me a story about an experience with your son along those lines when he was a teenager. I think it'd be great for you to share that if you'd be open
to
it.
Well, for us, it was pretty much during, you know, again, you're an expert on raising teenagers until you have one.
Uh-huh.
And when my firstborn became a teenager, I remember at 15, 16, as they're moving toward independence, I don't know, things just got difficult. And I felt like we were always correcting and trying to fix and get the grades up and get the curfews to happen. And finally, I was laying in bed one night and I said to Debbie, I feel like he doesn't like me and I don't like him anymore.
Hmm.
And I want to figure out what to do to fix that.
Yeah.
And so I went to him and I said, I think something's happened to our friendship and we don't enjoy each other anymore. So what did we set aside a night every week? And we went and did whatever you wanted to do. And anything related to grades or dating or any of those topics is off limits.
Great.
We're only going to have a conversation about the things that we both enjoy and like.
So whatever you were in conflict about the other 6 days of the week, that was not a part of your
Absolutely.
Thursday times.
And it didn't come up. But what I was amazed about was there were a few times when he brought something up because he felt comfortable enough in the context of that relationship to not see me as much as the one who makes, you know, the decisions as the authority figure, but as someone who cared about his future.
Yeah.
And cared about him and liked him. We're back to that idea. Yeah. So it was just a breakthrough for us. And even now, you know, as a 29-year-old, 30-year-old, he just turned 30, I'm just amazed at, you know, I'll get a phone call in the middle of the night, Dad, I'm coming by, you want to hang out and talk? And he'll bring in the latest music that he's been listening to and introduce me to some new songs that I may or may not like, but he likes them. And so, but the friendship.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, every parent hopes that their kids will grow up to be adults that like to hang around them and they like to be with.
Yeah.
And that's what we're fighting for. Yeah. We're fighting for that relationship.
That's fighting for the heart. That's connecting before correcting.
Yep. That's good. Well, Kara, thanks so much for giving us some insight. And I can't wait until we can talk about another topic together because this has been very, very enlightening.
Oh, I've learned a lot too, Reggie. Thanks.
And for those of you who are listening, thanks for joining ParentQ Live and we'll see you again next month.